Hi, Kathy.
Hey, how you doing, Ryan?
I'm doing great because I slept beautifully last night. How about you?
I did too. It was so amazing. I think I only got up once in the middle of the night.
Are you generally a good sleeper?
I love to sleep. I love to sleep. No kidding.
So if you're just joining us for this part of the season, we're trying something new here on Remaking Tomorrow. We have, as you can hear, a guest host. This is Kathy Hirsch-Pasek. Now, if you're a regular listener, you've actually heard Kathy before. Likewise, if you've read the book that I co-authored with Greg Bear, who's the regular co-host of this podcast, When You Wonder, You're Learning, Mr. Rogers' Enduring Lessons for Raising Creative, Curious, Caring Kids, you know Kathy's work because we are so heavily inspired. We are so heavily indebted to a book Kathy co-authored called Becoming Brilliant. Kathy is the Stanley and Deborah Lefkowitz Professor of Psychology at Temple University, where she directs the Infant Language Laboratory. And she's a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution, the American Psychological Association, the American Educational Research Society, and lots of other places. Kathy, what are we going to talk about today?
Oh, I am super psyched about today because it is the guru of sleep in the whole world, my dear friend Jody Mendel. And I have to tell you, I called Jody a couple months ago, right, Jody? You remember this. I had some friends over for dinner, and they said to me, oh, my daughter just had a baby. She's not sleeping anymore, which I said, well, that's normal. And they said, what's not normal is that the American Academy of Pediatrics is recommending that babies, after they're born, spend the first 6 months, better yet, even a year, in the room, not the same bed, but in the room, sleeping on their backs with their parents. And I thought to myself, isn't it hard enough that you just had a baby and you're trying to get some sleep? You're going to wake up every single time the baby gurgles. So I was dying, and my very first phone call was to Dr. Jody. Like, really? Is that really what's going on? And I now understand that a whole group of pediatricians wrote a response to that in the New York Times saying, well, you know, it does reduce SIDS, but let's be practical. And a newer study says maybe it's only 4 months. I'm just so confused now that I felt we had to have Jody on. So Jody, welcome.
Thank you. I remember that phone call well. You were like, what the? And I was like, yep.
You know, I can almost feel the envy of some of our listeners, especially if they're new parents, to have Dr. Jody Mendel on your cell phone and be able to call when you have a problem like that. But we're going to do the next best thing and pick your brain a little bit. So Dr. Jody Mendel is one of the country's leading experts on infant and toddler sleep issues. She is a professor of psychology at St. Joseph's University and the associate director of the Sleep Center at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, where she works as a psychologist. She's written extensively on pediatric sleep disorders. She has more than 130 publications, more than 500 presentations at national and international conferences to her name. She's been an associate editor for the journal Sleep. She's on the advisory board of Parents Magazine, and she's also the author of several books, including Sleeping Through the Night, How Infants, Toddlers, and Their Parents Can Get a Good Night's Sleep. Dr. Jody Mendel, we are so, so, so grateful to have you on Remaking Tomorrow. Welcome.
Thank you. It is always great to talk about sleep because it is one of the most difficult things parents struggle with. But on the other hand, we can make changes, or families can make changes, and it gets better.
And I want to ask you about that. As a new parent, I know from experience, you know, how interesting this topic is. And I know the feeling, you know, at 4 o'clock in the morning that it is the most important topic in the world. So I want to ask you, first of all, just how did you get interested in sleep to begin with, particularly sleep in babies and young children?
You know, that's always the question, like my students always ask, like, how'd you know what you wanted to do? And my answer always is, I had no idea. So I was in graduate school and my mentor, I worked in childhood headache. He left the university, right? As happens. And then all of a sudden you're in this, oh my gosh, what do I do? And I started working with another faculty member, Mark Durand, who is an amazing autism researcher. I really wanted to work in like health issues with typically developing children. And it is literally because his baby, Jonathan, didn't sleep. And so Mark and his wife switched off nights, and he would come in exhausted. And one day he said to me, go to the library, because you had to go to the library at that time, and find out what you can about infant sleep. And it is literally because of Jonathan. If Jonathan had slept, I'd be doing a whole different area. I don't know what I'd be doing.
Does Jonathan know that about himself and about you?
I have no idea. Jonathan's like in his 30s. I don't know.
So I have a question for you. I really was stunned when I saw the recommendation. I do know it's really important to reduce SIDS, but I have to know, like today, I'm seeing parents, you know, the kids in the same room for a long time, sometimes even more than 6 months. When the kid moves out of your room, there's the baby monitor. In fact, you know, when friends come over with their babies, they have to have the baby monitor literally right there in their hand while we're just talking. And, you know, what is important to do here? What is practical to do here? And are parents ever allowed to sleep?
So parents are allowed to sleep. That is a really important question. So I do want to preface this whole conversation by saying I have been, for the last 2 years, working with Dr. Rachel Moon, who is the leading author on the Safe Sleep Guidelines from the American Academy of Pediatrics, and an amazing person. And we're all now finally getting in the sandbox and finally talking as SIDS researchers and sleep researchers about this integration. But, you know, sometimes these things are in contrast. So I did go down the rabbit hole this morning, and I had done this years ago to look at, like, what is that evidence for room sharing but not bed sharing? Because, Kathy, I'm like you. Are you kidding? Having that baby in the room all the time? I think a few things are being done, and I'm making some assumptions here. You know, the evidence is very, very clear that bed sharing increases the risk of SIDS. Most of the evidence in the section where they talk about that they want the babies in the same room is all about they don't want babies sleeping in the same bed, right? And in one study or another study, quite old studies, which usually they're classics and, you know, babies are babies across the years, but it showed that in one study, 36% of babies who had died from SID, sudden infant death syndrome, were in their own room. Now, why does it matter that's an old study? In this technology time, like you just said, there's no study that's been done. Like when you have those monitors in another room, is that any different than having your baby in your same room? There's very limited evidence. The other thing I worry about, and sort of this is now taking it broadly, which we've been doing this work with Dr. Moon, which is, of course, the best name ever if you're working with babies and sleep.
Yeah, it really is.
You know, the thing is I worry about all the other consequences of room sharing with your baby if you don't want to be doing that. I worry about parents being tired. I worry about accidental injuries, right? When parents are super tired, they are at increased risk for things like car accidents or being distracted and having the baby roll off the changing table or just not being the parent that you want to be. And I would love to see studies, more studies showing that room sharing, if it really does decrease the risk when you compare it to babies in another room with monitors on them. Now, the other thing, I'm going to weigh us a little bit, which is I am not a monitor fan. Most people's homes, their baby is nearby, and if they're in a separate room, and you can hear them. Like if they mumble or they roll over, you don't need to hear them. If they're crying and they're upset, you need to hear them. Most people can do it in their homes. And so we had those audio monitors and that was okay. So, you know, if you were downstairs and the baby's up in their room, you're in your backyard, that's all great. These video monitors, parents are looking at them all night long. And the other thing is, we've kind of fallen into a society of fear mongering, is that the message is, if you are not watching that baby all the time, that baby's going to die. Right? That's the message. Right. And that's not true. Babies are fine.
You know, speaking of misconceptions, there's a lot out there when we talk about sleep. And there's a lot of misconceptions also when we talk about sleep training, which is something you're very well known for. In fact, depending on what you read about Dr. Jody Mendel on the internet, you might even see something called the Jody Mendel method. So there are lots of misconceptions, though, about what sleep training is. And I want to start there for right now. Like, what do we talk about when we talk about sleep training? Are we talking about crying it out, or is that different?
Sleep training. Wow. So sleep training is a word that encompasses so many different things. One end of the spectrum is, quote, cry it out. which we all hate that term, cried out, sounds like you're putting the baby in a room, locking them in and never coming back. And that baby's just got to figure it out, all the way to kind of the more gradual approaches, which is like holding the baby and not, you know, not moving or being next to the baby or whatever it's going to be. So for me, sleep training means that we are teaching our babies a skill of self-soothing, that they can settle themselves down to sleep. And we want that to happen at bedtime and whenever they naturally awaken during the night. So remember, sleeping like a baby means you're waking up a whole bunch during the night. We are too as adults, but we are able to put ourselves back to sleep, and babies who self-soothe can put themselves back to sleep. So sleep training for me is teaching that skill, is giving the baby the opportunity to have that skill. You know, we know, right? We want all of our babies to crawl. We want all of our babies to walk, right? But if you hold them 100% of the day and never put them down on the floor, they're not going to learn to crawl. They're not going to learn to walk. We need to give them the opportunity that we put them down and see what they do. And miraculously, most of them are just fine. It's when they've developed this habit over a long time, I have to be nursed to sleep, or I have to be rocked to sleep, or I have to rub my mom's ear to sleep, or rub my mom's elbow to sleep, or touch my dad's beard to sleep. I mean, you hear all of it. If you start developing that habit, you're going to need it at bedtime, and you're going to need it every time they waken during the night.
It sounds almost like sleep is a skill, something that can be practiced and mastered over time.
Yes. Falling asleep is a skill.
Guys, I have to jump in here because I think I could spend thousands and thousands of dollars getting a lot of gadgets and gizmos to rock me to sleep, to have the right sound on so that when I go to sleep, I never hear any of the noise of the birds chirping. I mean, are you saying, Jody, that I don't need to spend the thousands and thousands of dollars on these gadgets and gizmos?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Hey, you know, I sound like I'm so anti-technology, but I'm like such a techie person, but it's so funny. The best thing is the simplest thing, right? What happens if you put your baby in some gadget that rocks them to sleep, and every time they wake up at night and make a noise, it rocks them back to sleep? They can't be in it till they're 18. At some point, you got to transition them. And at some point, we want them to learn too that they have these skills of self-soothing.
You know, one of the things that I found most surprising when I was looking at your work, Jody, was that you actually did sort of a meta-analysis, 52 studies on different sleep training methods. And what's amazing is that 49 of them worked. 49 showed positive results. I mean, on one hand, that's great news, right? It tells us that sleep training, the different methods out there, you can find something that works for you. On the other, I wonder, what should they take away from all these studies? Like, what do you tell parents who are trying to make sense of all the information about sleep that's out there? What's most essential?
All right. You want your baby to sleep? Three things. Set bedtime. We want to set that baby's internal clock. A bedtime routine. So 3 to 4 steps, getting ready for bed, you know, like a bath and reading stories and a lullaby and a kiss goodnight, right? That bedtime routine. And the third thing is that skill of learning to fall asleep independently. Every one of those methods all have that essential component. How you do it, you know, whether it's cry it out or whether it's the most gradual approach in the world, all of those, it's the same thing. It's teaching a baby how to fall asleep independently. So it's all that. Now, let me just come back to cry it out. So cry it out, I don't recommend that. I think it's really hard on families. In my clinic, if they could have done it, they would have. But we went on to like sites where parents are just supporting each other in sleep training. A huge percentage of parents just naturally do that. And so like, which method do you pick? Like, what do? You have to think about, as a parent or a grandparent or a nanny or whatever, is what's your tolerance for crying? And the other is what's your baby's temperament? Some babies, it just pisses them off so much when you walk back in that room and leave again. It's like, okay, I can't go in. And other parents are like running in after 30 seconds and the baby is like, oh, thank you for coming back. It's like a component of those two things. Even if you have twins, you may pick two different methods with two different babies who are the exact same age and the exact same family. It's really just working out. A family knows what's kind of work best in their family. Now, the other thing is I do want to say, if you're a family who nurses your baby to sleep and either they sleep all night or they wake up twice, you nurse them back to sleep, and everyone's happy with it, don't mess with success. This is not that we're going out and like dictating that all these families have to do this. This is only for families who are struggling and really need to make a change.
Jody, why does sleep matter for young kids? I mean, beyond, of course, their poor parents down the hall who have to get up for work the next day. What does sleep do for kids? And what happens if they don't get it? Developmentally, physically, emotionally?
You know, I always sort of bucket into like kind of different areas that sleep affects. So first of all, it affects mood, right? That's the number one people say. They're cranky, they're irritable, the babies, they can't emotionally regulate, they can't tolerate frustrations. It affects their cognitive development. So things like attention span, right? Processing information, all language development, right? Kathy, that's your whole big thing. It affects health. One of the biggest things we know is sleep and obesity. That relationship is very, very strong, is that babies who aren't sleeping are much more likely to be obese. And that affects families. So if a baby's not sleeping, the parents aren't sleeping, and parents can't be the best parents if they're not sleeping. It really sort of lifts all boats, getting everybody's to sleep. It lifts the baby's boat, right? The baby's doing better, and the whole family unit's doing better. If you've ever walked into a childcare setting at nap time, I don't know, Ryan, if your little guy's in a childcare setting, it is the most astonishing thing. They have these 1 and 2 year olds on little cots, and they're vacuuming around them, and they're all asleep. It's because they have routine. They know every day after lunch, I'm going to go in my cot. And I don't know if it's peer pressure. They all stay there. It's kind of amazing. And it's routine.
So one more question that I have is about the sleep score. What is it?
I'm so excited about this new development. So a number of years ago, Dr. Avi Sadeh, the late Dr. Sadeh, unfortunately, who was one of my most amazing colleagues from Tel Aviv University, he and I really wanted to increase access to care and to help. And we created a place where parents can input information. So they answer this validated questionnaire, the Brief Infant Sleep Questionnaire that was published in the journal Pediatrics that Avi had developed. And then it gives them information back. It gives them recommendations. And part of it is it gives a score. And it gives a score just to give parents a kind of a benchmark of where they're at. Because some parents say, oh my gosh, my baby's a terrible sleeper. And then they find out, oh no, they're really a good sleeper. I had unrealistic expectations. Or the other way, which is they think, I have a great sleeper. And it's like, no, I think they could be a little better. So recently, we sort of had been living on the Johnson's Bedtime app. And we've just recently launched it on our website, babysleep.com. So babysleep.com is a website that I developed as the head of the Pediatric Sleep Council, which is just about 30 pediatric sleep experts from around the world. It's a complete labor of love. Parents can go to it from anywhere in the world, and it answers just about every question you can think about your baby's sleep. There is no advertising. There's nothing. It is super clean. It is just a place where experts have come to share information. And two things about it. We've launched it now in, I think it's in 17 languages, Spanish, Portuguese, Hindi. It's also, though, I don't know why the web designer did this. He picked Gaelic and Welsh, and he's from Kenya, so he also did Swahili, which was really exciting to see. It was really neat. So that one thing that we've done is we've now made the website completely available in all of these languages. The other thing we did is that we have kind of freshened up the baby sleep score, and we have made it available there. Anybody can use it, and it just gives you advice, and you can go in and use it many times or one time. My whole goal is to really help families around the world get the sleep they need by making information available.
Wow. Well, you know, Jody, over the years, I have to say, it has been a pleasure not only being your friend, but having you on the Rolodex. And I can tell now that with babysleep.com, you're on everyone's Rolodex, and that is super exciting for the world.
And we know how important the availability of these resources and interventions is, partially because of a new paper you actually just co-authored in the journal Pediatrics. I just want to talk about that paper a little bit. Can you talk about, first of all, what it is you were investigating and what it is you found that led you to create such an amazing resource?
So this paper was a really great project. And so I mentioned before, Dr. Rachel Moon is a SIDS researcher, and myself, we were brought together by a group at Nationwide Children's. Lara McKenzie is a safety researcher, and she brought us all together, which was great because I don't think we would have ended up in that same sandbox. What we started talking about is Dr. Moon is all about safe sleep. I'm all about good sleep. Is that those two things for families feel many times independent. And so the paper was talked about the tension between the two, is that so many families are engaging in unsafe sleep practices because they don't think they're realistic and they don't think that their baby will sleep as well. We did sort of these focus groups or virtual groups where we had parents talk about why aren't they following these guidelines, not in a judgmental way, but like, what's realistic here? We're telling these families, right, the ABCs, the American Academy of Pediatrics has the ABCs, alone, on their backs, in their cribs. And families are saying, she doesn't feel like she sleeps as well on her back. She's not comfortable. She's waking three times a night. I can't do it. I need to sort of just do anything for my sanity. And so it's really going to be this springboard to start developing information for parents that integrates the two. How can you have your baby sleep safely and sleep well? The babies wake up at night, it's naturally protecting for them. Because if there is a problem, they have a breathing problem or they're stuck or something, we want them to wake up and fix it. We don't want them sleeping so soundly that they don't respond to it. So babies not sleeping great in those first few months is actually the way we want them sleeping.
Jody, I have to ask, I know babies are your expertise, but you're a sleep expert. So when you yourself are having trouble sleeping, can you put yourself back under, or do you know too much about sleep at this point?
I know, I worry about it in the middle of the night. Exactly. You know, what's interesting is like I'm known as an infant sleep researcher, and all my public education is about that. But I work in a sleep center at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and we see kids from birth to 18 years, 20 years with every sleep problem out there. And that's why I love sleep, because it's so interesting. We see sleepwalkers and we see kids with breathing issues and we see kids with narcolepsy and we see kids with autism and kids with sickle cell anemia. Like, and so it's really fun that I get to do all of that. And do I sleep well at night? You know what? I go to bed early. I have a bedtime routine and no one rocks me to sleep.
So we are just about out of time here, Jody. And usually at the end of this program, we ask every guest the same question. And Kathy is going to do the honors.
Oh, I'm so excited. Jody, I think I know what you'll say about this, but here you go. What's the one thing listeners can do today to make tomorrow a more promising place for every learner?
I'm a sleep person. So of course, I'm going to say, have a bedtime routine. Whether you have a baby, you have a 3-year-old, you have a 9-year-old, you have an 18-year-old, or you have a partner, have a bedtime routine. It incorporates all the things we want for kids, and it helps with learning without a doubt.
We are so grateful to Dr. Jody Mendel. She's the author of Sleeping Through the Night, How Infants, Toddlers, and Their Parents Can Get a Good Night's Sleep. Jody, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it's been just terrific. It's always a pleasure.
Remaking Tomorrow is powered by Remake Learning. Learn more at remakelearning.org.